You're listening to Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. In a second, we're going to be joined by a former Globe reporter who is now a Globe correspondent. You know what that means, Marjorie? For those who read the paper and say, what's the difference? I assume the difference is you're on staff as opposed to you're not on staff.
I think the crucial thing about Steve Kirchner, I think he's won about 17 Pulitzer Prizes. I'm exaggerating by a few, but he's a big deal reporter.
So here's the deal. 23 years and no arrests. It's more than two decades, as you all know this, after the biggest art theft in history. Nobody's been charged with a crime. None of the 13 paintings taken from the Gardner, valued at a half billion, by the way, have been found. Over the weekend, Marjorie said it, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, former Globe reporter, now Globe correspondent, Steve Kirchner added another spectacular chapter to the story. Good afternoon, Steve Kirchner.
How are you?
Excellent.
Hey, Steve, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
So tell us what you've learned about this night watchman at the Gardner Museum.
Well, this night watchman, Rick Abbott, he had, I had learned his name in about 10 years ago, and I approached him for takeout I did for the Globe back in 2005, and he'd only talk to me if he could be off the record, and I went for that basis. And we had a long, detailed interview in which he acknowledged being, a stoner, I guess,
at work,
and then some,
and then some, but he wanted to be off the record, so I told his story in this long takeout in 2005. More recently, I had heard he had been summoned back to Boston and been questioned by the authorities, the federal authorities, on his actions that night. And I reached out to him, and he gave me some account of it. And then he told me that he was writing a manuscript. And I said to him, well, when you get done with it, can I take a look at it? And he sent it right away, about 10, 15 pages. Pretty clear, pretty straightforward. And I said, well, what are you going to do with this? And he said, well, I'm hoping to get into a graduate program, and I'm hoping to publish it. So I said, well, maybe you'd like to get some publicity. And he said, yeah, that makes sense. So I said, well, why don't you, go on the record? So we thought about it, and just around the same time, I got a call from a CNN, and they said to me, they asked me if I would reach out to him for an interview. Would he give them an interview? And I did. He said he'd go for it. He talked to his wife, and there they went for it. So I went back up to Brattleboro, Vermont, a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, when we had a sit-down and long, detailed conversation in which he went over these two, seemed to me new, very glaring peculiarities in his role that night.
So give us the bill of particulars that you laid out beautifully, I thought, in your piece this weekend, Steve.
Thank you. Scott Allen, my editor, deserves a tip of the hat on
and
that.
And you too, Scott, wherever you are. Go ahead.
The two peculiarities were that just before the bad guys, the two men dressed as police officers, showed up at the side entrance of the museum and rang the bell at 1:24 in the morning, a few minutes before that, Rick Abbott, the night watchman, he opened the side door and sort of broke the security of the museum. It showed up on their motion detector machine, which was the one piece of equipment that worked. And as it turned out, no one else who works the museum the midnight shift or the earlier late shift, opens the door, touches that door. So those who flyspecked the transcript said what he may have been doing was alerting the bad guys that he had taken over the security desk, Abbott, and if the thing should begin, that they should now come and ring the bell, and he would let them in. And he discounts that, disputes that totally, and says that no, that's what he did every night. That he broke the security of the door to make sure that that door, the employee's entrance, was locked and secure.
And what did you say, Steve? I can't remember from your piece. What did you say about whether or not there were any records that suggest that he did, in fact, do that prior to that night?
I cannot get to the records. The records are possessed by the federal authorities, okay, and they are not disclosing that. But that's the account he says he gave them directly on the record with his right hand in the air. So if he's lying on that, I think he would have a problem. But that was one major peculiar.
Yeah, what's the second one?
The second one was during just a few minutes before He opened that door, and the bad guys showed up to ask for entry. Abbott walked through. He was on the first patrol. What they do is they do a tour of the galleries to make sure that every gallery is secure. He did a tour of one of the galleries where one painting was stolen, a Manet portrait. And his footsteps were seen in that gallery, show up on the motion detector machine two times during that period of time. So around 12:45, 12:50 in the morning. The bad guys, once they go in, come into the museum, handcuff and take control of Abbott and the second night guard who didn't have really any sort of discretionary role. All these discretionary things were taken by Abbott. But the machine does not show, the equipment does not show any footsteps from the bad guys in that room. It shows them back and forth from the Dutch room on the second floor, where they took the Vermeer and the several Rembrandts, and it shows them into the short gallery where they took the Degas sketches and the finial, which is a eagle-shaped top of a flag of a Napoleonic flag banner.
And what's his defense of that, Steve Kirchin?
He really does. He says, "Yes, I was in that room. I was in that room as part of my patrols. That I went into the room the first time. Just as I exited the room, a fire alarm went off elsewhere in the building inside the museum. I had to respond to that. I did respond. I deactivated the machine. Then I went back to my patrols, and that's why I went through the gallery, the blue room, for the second time. But I had nothing to do. He absolutely is very intent that he had nothing to do with stealing any of the paintings, including the Manet. And as his trump card, he says, I don't have confirmation from this from the federal authorities, but he has said this both on the record now repeatedly, that he passed a lie detector test twice. There was one caveat to that lie detector test,
what?
Interestingly enough, and that is, Mr. Abbott, have you taken drugs within the past 48 hours? No, I have not.
Well, Steve Kirchin, Steve Kirchin from the Boston Globe wrote this great piece about this new twist in the Gardner Museum art heist, which has not been solved. Of course, $500 million worth of paintings stolen. But that one of the things that I thought, whether this night watchman had anything to do with this or not, his confessions about the drug use, saying that not only had he occasionally shown up drunk or high on pot at the job, he also talked about taking LSD and cocaine.
I had not heard that before.
Neither had I. And one of the things is he let in the cops. They weren't cops, of course. They were thieves, but they were dressed up as cops.
Right.
He thought they were cops. He opened the door. So I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if you're tripping on LSD, you're out in White Rabbit Land or something with gray slick, you know, maybe that's what you do when you see cops at the door. You just open the door and confess or something.
Well, I'm not sure. He repeated, as he now, as he did back in 2005, that he was not under any influences that night.
That's right.
He had been.
That's what he says.
But he absolutely says he was not. But I had not heard, and I pressed him on this. I said, cocaine? I've never heard cocaine. You never told me about cocaine. And he said, yeah, I periodically use cocaine. And I said, well, there's the link. You obviously bought cocaine from the wrong drug trafficking group in Boston, and you gave up a piece of information. If this is true, if Abbott does hold a very important a connection to the solving of this case, I think it's not intentional. I think it's unintentional.
You know, Steve,
I think he was just partying with the wrong group of people at some point, and he was very open about how, how candid he was about the museum's vulnerabilities. And he said the wrong thing to the wrong person.
You know, I think your piece makes a pretty compelling case, and I find his arguments on the other side to be quite weak. But if that's the case, and it's been almost a quarter of a century, I think I recall from your story this weekend that it isn't like he's been the subject of intense questioning over the last couple of decades. It's episodic, isn't it?
It is episodic, and I think I got to tip my hat to Anthony Amore, whom you guys have interviewed.
Yeah, we're going to mention
you two have interviewed in the past. And Amore has really fly-specked the transcripts of the comings and goings and the footsteps of the thieves through the gallery, and it was through his intense work and looking at those footsteps that got these questions they were confronted to Abbath with.
Well, speaking of that, you mentioned Steve Kirchin, with whom we were speaking, wrote this great piece in the Globe this weekend and about the latest after 23 years on the Gardner. I love the word heist. Everybody says heist.
Heist.
The Gardner art heist. Anthony Amore is the director of security at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. And as Steve just mentioned, Marjorie and I had him on our old radio show about a year ago. He wrote a book and he was promoting the book. And listen to this short exchange between us and Amore. Believe you know the names of the identity of the people who did it. You believe you know where, what is it, 13 works? How many is it?
13.
13 works worth at least $500 million. You think you know where they are.
I've always felt that way.
Yikes.
Wow.
Now
I've never felt like we didn't know. It's just a matter of, like you said, connecting the dots, putting everything together. This is too big a case to just go wing it.
So does he think, I mean, assuming that he was telling us the truth, and we tried to probe further, we did it, we weren't successful. Does he think Abbath is as involved as your story suggests he probably is?
You're going to have to ask Anthony Moore yourselves on that. I'm not going to try to, summarize what Anthony thinks.
Okay, then let me ask you another question about what someone knows. Carmen Ortiz, the U.S. attorney,
right,
who you, I'm quoting her from your story, says the investigation is active and sometimes fast-moving. Is that CYA or is that for real? That's a sigh from Steve Kirchin.
I am trying to answer that question from as much sort of speculation as much as knowledge. I don't know is the quickest and the best answer. My speculation is she's not going to use words that that don't convey something.
Yeah.
So I would have to think there's something going on. Now they were very, very excited and very hopeful about last year this time when
that Connecticut gangster guy,
Robert Gentile, and Gentile, they really felt, had a had a piece of the puzzle. There was a piece of puzzle with him, and they went to the so far as digging up his backyard with 40 plus agents. I mean, they don't do that out of a whim or just secondhand knowledge. They, that's really based on substantial information that they didn't come up with something. And now Gentile has pleaded guilty, and he'll be about to be sentenced for possession of some, low-level drugs and possession of a pistol. He'll do some, there'll be a recommendation for some heavy time for him. But the feds still, I believe, think that Gentile has a secret in him that he's not conveying. And that's what I tried to show. Why hasn't this puzzle? Why hasn't this mystery been solved? Why haven't we had any information? And one theory is that these were two low-level bad guys. They were involved in a lot of gangster stuff going on in and around Boston, and they suffered that toll for something else, not because of the Gardner, but some other deal that they were involved in. And there were, during the late 80s to mid-90s, there's a lot of gangster activity, unlike now, that was going on in Boston. And a lot of people died. A lot of people died.
And you think they might be dead?
So that's one.
Yeah.
Posit.
Okay.
The second one is that someone who does know something is in jail or not, is just worried that if he does or she does give up information, that they will be vulnerable.
We're talking with Steve Kirchin from the Boston Globe. We did this great piece this weekend on the Gardner heist, or you could also call it the Gardner caper. I like that word, too.
It's one of the capers.
One last question for me, Steve Kirchin. In the picture in the Globe on Sunday, the security guard, Richard Abbath, am I pronouncing it correctly? I think so.
Yes, he
was pictured in red pants when he was duct taped and handcuffed in the basement.
Right.
Where was his security guard outfit? He was in this weird, like he was some kind of 60s, you know, Davy and the Dreamers or something.
Or he's going to the conclave, depending on your, but go ahead.
I don't remember Ukiah. You might have, Jim. You were a man of the night.
Yeah, rock group.
So, but he might have been coming in from a gig. He says that. That's why he had given a 2-week notice to the museum, is because he really felt that his band was going to take off, and you know, he just couldn't do both. Okay. He couldn't play late night gigs and then have to show up at the Gardner and be you know work 8 hours sober and insane.
Hey,
you know?
Two last quick questions from me, Steve Kirchen. Let me ask you the exact same question we asked Anthony Amore a year and a half ago, and I won't ask the follow up question because I know you couldn't answer it. Do you think you know who's responsible for this theft and where the paintings are, or either of those two questions?
I've listened to that tape of Anthony, and he talks about connecting the dots. The dots to me are not as if he thinks the dots are bright, you know, more power to him and the authorities. In my working on it, and I don't have the benefit of any federal, they're not assisting in any work I'm doing. I don't see it as bright as that. So.
Fair enough. Here's the last and most important question. If you had a choice, you can only choose one, Steve Kirchen from the Globe. You could either spend a weekend with Bruce Springsteen at his house in New Jersey, or you could have the thieves call you on the phone this afternoon and confess. Which would you take, Steve? Go ahead, tell the truth.
I'll take the thieves.
Oh, no, you won't. Steve Kirchen, great piece
yes,
this weekend
would.
In the Boston Globe. Stay on
thank
it and stay
you.
In touch with us.
Yeah.
Great
you
Steve Kirchen.
Thank
so,
you.
If you're into
thank
the Gardner thing, and who isn't, it's a terrific new chapter in that great story.
And you got to get a look at the security guard in his red pants.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a sight to be seen. Okay, up next, open mic with Reverend Eugene Rivers III, next on Boston Public Radio. He's going to make a provocative argument that race hardly matters at all in politics anymore. That's next on 89.7.